he handed me his business card, and his business card just said, you know, there wasn't any company name or anything like that. It said, "I'm friends with Satoshi." And it had his, you know, name and email address on there. And I thought that was a very, very memorable business card.
Hello, welcome to episode 39 of The Bitcoin Game. I'm Rob Mitchell. Odds are, if you're into Bitcoin, then you know Roger Ver. And you perhaps are aware that Roger is one of the bigger proponents of increasing Bitcoin's maximum block size as soon as possible. But he's not just talking about it, he's taking action, as you'll hear. We cover a number of subjects, including how much Roger made from one Steemit post. It's a lot. Roger even lets us in on his Bitcoin gut check a few weeks ago. Stay tuned to the very end of the podcast if you want to hear a blessing from Bitcoin Jesus. Here's our interview. Hi, Roger. Thanks for talking with me today.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
I thought I'd invite you on the show after seeing a lot of your tweets lately about increasing the block size, but there's a lot of other stuff I'd like to talk to you about first before we get to that topic.
Sure. I'm happy to cover whatever topics you would like.
Great. What were you doing before you got into Bitcoin?
So before Bitcoin, I was the CEO of a company called memorydealers.com, where I have over 15 years of experience scaling enterprise networks. I sold all sorts of networking hardware that was used in networks across the world, actually, to pretty much any company you can think of. We sold parts to them. So I did that and then discovered Bitcoin and realized that this is going to change the entire world, and got involved full-time doing Bitcoin for quite a while now.
When were you introduced to Bitcoin?
Early 2011, like March of 2011.
Pretty early. And how did you have that introduction?
I heard about Bitcoin on a radio program called Free Talk Live as a podcast that I like to listen to. And when I first heard about Bitcoin, they were about 10 cents each, but I didn't pay enough attention to that point and bought my first Bitcoins at about $1 each, which is still pretty early.
Do you remember who specifically you were listening to on Free Talk Radio?
Yeah, Free Talk Live is the actual name of the show, and the hosts are Ian and Mark, and I believe they were talking about Bitcoin in reference to the Silk Road when it had first launched. And I'm someone who's never bought or sold or used any drugs of any sort, other than, you know, occasionally I'll drink some alcohol every once in a while, very rarely. Never tried any cigarettes, never tried marijuana, never tried anything else. But when I heard about this money that could be used to allow people to buy and sell whatever they wanted online, I realized, oh, that must mean it's a better form of money than all the other forms of money that people have available to them. And I'd spent my youth studying economics, so I think I had a pretty good understanding of that. And when I understood the details of Bitcoin and how it was decentralized and couldn't be controlled or stopped or shut down, I realized that this is going to change everything. And here we are, you know, over 5 years later, and it's on the verge of changing everything.
Were you mining? Were you trading? Were you holding?
Mainly holding. So I had more dollars than Bitcoin back then. So I started trading in the dollars for Bitcoins and held on to as many of those as I could. I did some GPU mining in late 2011 and 2012. I think the contribution that I'm, I suppose, the most proud of, or the most I feel like had the biggest impact, was back in that time, the first thing people would always say, well, what can you buy with Bitcoin? You can't buy anything with it. But I set out to change that, and I set up a website called bitcoinstore.com, and I partnered with another company called Ingram Micro, which is the largest business-to-business reseller of consumer electronics in the entire United States and probably the world. And we listed every single item on their line card available for Bitcoin on bitcoinstore.com at my cost. And we only accepted Bitcoin. And the first year we sold about $4 million worth of consumer electronics, all in Bitcoin, 100% paid in Bitcoin, and kept all the Bitcoins there. And that did, you know, we earned the profit from the appreciation of the value of the Bitcoins. But it was really, really fun, because before that website, there wasn't really much that you could buy on the internet for Bitcoin other than, you know, some alpaca socks and some things like that. But whereas bitcoinstore.com, I think, was a real turning point for the Bitcoin ecosystem that allowed people to actually be able to say, oh, well, you can buy just about everything you can buy on Amazon for Bitcoin at prices that are just about as cheap, if not cheaper, than Amazon. It started in 2012, and then I think I finally shut it down in maybe 2014. Because so many other merchants around the world had started accepting Bitcoin at that point, there wasn't any point for me to continue to do that anymore. So, you know, mission accomplished.
What are your thoughts on, say, the various privacy coins that are in the space?
Aside from the scaling issue, which I'm sure we'll get into later, Bitcoin's biggest weakness is the lack of privacy available to people. You have to be really, really, really careful with how you use your Bitcoins in order to use them privately. Whereas there's some other coins like Monero that's already out, Dash that's already out, and then Zcash that's coming out that offer a much stronger privacy than Bitcoin at the moment. So that's if an altcoin wants to compete with Bitcoin, I think there's two places where they can compete with Bitcoin. One is on scalability and transaction fees associated with that, and then the other is privacy. And those other coins that I mentioned definitely have an advantage over Bitcoin at the moment when it comes to privacy, but that doesn't mean it'll always be the case. Maybe Bitcoin will be able to make some improvements on that front as well in the near future.
Do you have any stance on both Ethereum and now Ethereum Classic?
So I don't follow that real closely. From kind of looking in from the outside, it seems that Ethereum Classic is the real Ethereum, but the majority of the market share seems to be with Ethereum at this point. So I'm busy enough with Bitcoin to pay too much attention to that.
So. Well, I think that's fun that you don't follow it. That's that says a lot right there, I guess. Do you have any interest in things like Steemit?
I was a little bit skeptical of Steemit, but I made my first post on Steemit like, I don't know, a week or two ago. And sure enough, I wound up getting paid like in a bunch of Steemit dollars that I then converted to, I think I got 9 Bitcoins for one post, which is hard to argue with that. So I don't know enough about the Steemit platform as a whole to know how long that it will be able to continue for and how much Steem dollars there are that will continue to be able to be paid out that people will be willing to trade real Bitcoins for. But, you know, I was happy to get my 9 Bitcoins for one post.
Wow.
Who wouldn't be happy about that?
That was about the best ad for Steemit, I think you could say. Do you have any idea like what the metrics were on that? Like how many views or how?
Yeah, I don't know other than I was looking on Alexa.com, which is like a ranking of web pages by the amount of traffic they get. And Steemit is getting an amazing amount of traffic. And I hate to say it, but they're getting more traffic than Bitcoin.com now at this point. So Steemit's definitely doing something right to get that much traffic. And you go on there and you see how there's so many articles that people are posting with a zillion comments underneath. And it's like people are really actively participating over there, which is a good thing. That means people are enjoying it.
And you mentioned comparing it to Bitcoin.com.
Yeah, I'm busy running Bitcoin.com every day. So like Steemit's 12,000th in the world, Bitcoin.com is 20,000th in the world. So congratulations to Steemit.
Support the show by buying a Bitcoin keychain at bkeychain.com. This is the classic Bitcoin keychain you've seen all over the internet. It's a substantial coin-like medallion that you'll be proud to keep with you at all times. For those who love a pun in times of division, check out the Bitcoin Fork Pen at bitcoinforks.com. Bitcoin Fork Pens are sure to get a laugh at the next Bitcoin meetup or conference. Again, that's bkeychain.com and bitcoinforks.com.
You know, I ran a business that served customers all over the world for 15 years before Bitcoin, and I know very clearly in order to keep your customers happy, you have to give them what they want, and you have to give it to them promptly and accurately and safely and reliably. And if customers have a better option that provides better service at a lower price, they're going to switch. And we're starting to see that happen with Bitcoin at this point because the transactions take so long to get confirmed. Double spins are easier today than they've ever been before. The fees are getting higher and higher. This is a huge, huge, huge problem for Bitcoin. And you can see it very clearly for anyone that goes over to like coincap.io, for example. The total market dominance of market cap for Bitcoin at this point has just dropped below 80% basically for the first time. And I remember very clearly not very long ago at all, Bitcoin had more than 95% of the total market cap. So it's going down, down, down. And that's specifically because people are starting to use altcoins instead of Bitcoin because the Bitcoin network is at a, you know, absolutely 100% capacity, and it's been at 100% capacity for months, and there's not room for additional businesses and users and people to start using Bitcoin at this point. And it's absolutely insane to not allow Bitcoin to scale to allow more people to use it when we only have a couple million people around the world using it today. And we're seeing companies like Coinbase that initially was one of the most prominent Bitcoin companies in the entire world, one of the best Bitcoin cheerleaders in the entire world, and brought more people to start using Bitcoin than just about any other company in the entire world. If you look at their marketing material now, they've changed everything from saying Bitcoin to digital currencies. And there's no doubt in my mind that that's a direct result of Bitcoin not being allowed to scale. I mean, the CEO of Coinbase, Brian Armstrong, was shouting up and down on the internet for months complaining that Bitcoin needs to be allowed to scale. And now that it hasn't been allowed to scale, look at that. His company is now being marketed as a digital currency company or digital assets company. It's not being marketed as a Bitcoin company anymore. And that's just absolutely insane that sort of thing's going on.
Are you working with developers who have a current push for their platform to be a new, bigger block size fork or whatever we want to call it?
Yeah, the people that aren't as eager for Bitcoin to scale promptly as I am are going to love hearing what I'm up to right now. So I'm in the process of building a Bitcoin.com mining pool, which is just about ready, and that's going to be used to influence the mining debate. And I'm also busy putting together a competing development team to the existing core team that doesn't seem to be interested in allowing Bitcoin to scale fast enough to keep up with consumer demand. So those are the two main things, is a Bitcoin.com mining pool and then a competing dev team to the current core team. Both of those, I think, are really exciting and are going to get a lot of attention and support from the community as a whole. Because if you look at it, just about every single business that serves actual customers and has actual people using their service, they're in favor of allowing Bitcoin to scale right now today. And bigger blocks is the easiest, fastest, safest way to do that.
Are you still working with Gavin Andreessen? Or I don't know, still, if you were working with him before, but is he maybe a member of this team or...?
I really, really like Gavin, and I think he's a really, really smart guy that has done a huge amount for Bitcoin. This is the person Satoshi Nakamoto himself chose to hand over the keys to the project to. Maybe he was fooled by Craig Wright. We don't know exactly everything that happened there, but smart people can get fooled all the time. I mean, look at, you know, Craig Wright is either Satoshi Nakamoto or he's David Copperfield, right? Like, the guy's an amazing magician if he's not Satoshi Nakamoto. And, like, the evidence seems to lead towards him being David Copperfield rather than Satoshi Nakamoto. But people can be fooled. We're all humans. Gavin's not perfect. Neither am I. Neither is anybody else. So, like, cut the guy a break. You know, people get fooled. So what? That doesn't mean he's, you know, a horrible human being. He's a great guy who's done a lot and been one of the calmest, most reasonable voices in the entire Bitcoin ecosystem since before I even got involved. So, you know, big kudos to Gavin for everything he's done, and he has my admiration and thanks and appreciation for everything he's done. And to answer your question directly, I consider Gavin a friend. I like him. He's not directly involved in the competing core development team that I'm putting together at this point, but I think he'd be welcome to participate if he's interested.
I would hope that the Craig Wright thing was a minor, not a major thing to anybody. It seemed like a pretty small incident.
Unfortunately, it's been a major, major thing for people on the internet. They try and claim that, oh, Gavin was fooled by this, so we shouldn't trust him with anything at all ever. And it really, really bothers me when I see people saying things like that on the internet, because everybody can get fooled. I don't think there's a human being alive on the planet that hasn't been fooled by someone somewhere somehow.
Were you kind of working closely with Gavin at all during the Bitcoin Classic days, or you guys just both similar thoughts but not really working together?
Yeah, I think Gavin and I have a similar vision for where we want to see Bitcoin go. We want to see Bitcoin become a currency that rivals the dollar, the euro, and the yen for world dominance. Whereas I get the feeling that a lot of the people that aren't in favor of scaling Bitcoin promptly, they either aren't as interested in that, or they think that there's no way that anybody would ever be able to use anything other than Bitcoin, and they don't feel or fear any of the threat from any of these altcoins that are coming up. So, but in my involvement in Bitcoin and Gavin's involvement in Bitcoin, Gavin's been much more involved on the technical side, and I've been much more involved on the business side of making services that make Bitcoin useful for people around the world to actually use in commerce. So we actually haven't had all that much overlap in the areas that we've been working on Bitcoin, other than that we share a similar goal. And we both use the skills that we each have individually to try and achieve that goal.
Since you're mentioning it, do you want to list off some of the companies you've started or been a major investor in?
Yeah, so I was the first person in the entire world to start investing in Bitcoin startups. And I started doing that years before anybody else really started paying any attention. So I was the very first investor in blockchain.info. I was the very, very first investor in Ripple, which is a competing altcoin at this point. But I was in the first round of investment for BitPay, for Kraken, for Coinapult, I know the list goes on and on. If I go to rogerveer.com, is probably where I should take a look at the ones that are currently still in business. And a lot of them didn't make it. Some of them did, but yeah, it's still going on today. And then today I'm spending all of my time, you know, on Bitcoin.com as well. So, but yeah, Purse.io, Shapeshift, Truthcoin, Cephalo, Luckstack, Bitcoin Bounty Hunter is a fun one as well. There's all sorts of things, and there's a bunch that unfortunately didn't make it, but that's the nature of you know, investing, is some make it and some don't. And again, BitcoinStore.com I think is one of the ones that I have the most fond memories of, because at that point there wasn't really anywhere for people to spend their Bitcoin, and then with the creation of BitcoinStore.com, suddenly everybody could say, oh, you can buy, you know, 500,000 consumer electronic products for Bitcoin, and that sort of thing didn't exist before that.
So I guess let's talk about, obviously, it's a pretty divisive issue, specifically increasing the maximum block size. Do you just discount the other side's views that it's a little risky to try to do that?
There's risk in everything, and there's risk in getting out of bed in the morning. So, but I think they've overstated the amount of risk that's there, to be honest. So I've talked to lots of people on both sides there. And the risks that are there, I think those risks are worth taking. So, and I think the danger of not taking those risks is even bigger than the risks themselves. If we don't scale Bitcoin fast enough, something else is going to usurp it, and Bitcoin will wind up becoming a currency that can challenge the dollar, the euro, or the yen. And so even if there's a chance that something goes wrong, that's a chance worth taking is how I see it.
So are you thinking it's really a popular hands-on use case that people are trying Bitcoin, having problems with fees or transactions getting through, and it's literally stopping individuals from using Bitcoin right now?
Absolutely, without any doubt whatsoever. And I have lots of empirical evidence to support that. So one is at Bitcoin.com, we get dozens and dozens of people that go through a really onerous contact form before they're actually allowed to contact us, complaining about transactions not confirming and this and that and fees and what about this, and like people are having all sorts of problems because of the network being congested. And these are people that are brand new to Bitcoin, so they're contacting Bitcoin.com because they mistakenly think that we control Bitcoin and can control everything and fix everything. And then another example are the support tickets at blockchain.info, the most popular Bitcoin wallet in the entire world, that's responsible for more Bitcoin transactions on the Bitcoin network than every single other wallet combined. And they're just getting flooded with support requests from their customers that are upset about the fees changing and transactions taking longer to confirm than they did previously. So that's a huge, huge problem. And guess what? If people have a bad user experience using something, they're less inclined to use it in the future. And we're seeing that happen with Bitcoin. If Bitcoin sucks compared to PayPal or a bank or Venmo or whatever, or some altcoin, people aren't going to use Bitcoin. They're going to use something else.
That's pretty nice to get the insight from blockchain.info.
Yeah, I was the first investor in blockchain. I'm the largest single shareholder in blockchain.info as well. So I get to hear things. I have another angle for you, how this is hindering adoption. So can I ask you, how did you receive your first Bitcoin ever?
I actually bought it on eBay.
Okay. So I know for myself and just about everybody I know that got involved in Bitcoin in the early days, we got our first Bitcoin from a Bitcoin faucet. And we got to see the magic firsthand about, and if you understood the technology that was happening behind the scenes, it was amazing, right? I went to some website, I just pasted my Bitcoin address, and then boom, you know, a penny or two worth of Bitcoins arrived in my wallet just like that. That was like magic. I could feel and see the magic of Bitcoin just like that. And I think there's probably been, you know, over a million people, I would guess, got their first Bitcoins from a Bitcoin wallet like that. And today, with the fees being so high, Bitcoin faucets are no longer possible. You can't do anything like that because the network fees are so high. And that's just, imagine, you know, we get, you know, tens of thousands of new visitors to Bitcoin.com every single day. Most of them want to get a Bitcoin wallet and want to get, you know, their first Bitcoin. Imagine how much more interesting of a user experience it would be for them if we could tell them, okay, install this wallet software and then paste your Bitcoin address here and we'll send you, you know, a penny or a worth of Bitcoin. And they could see the magic and they could feel it. But today that's not possible. So all these people that might want to start using Bitcoin, it doesn't seem nearly as exciting to them, where now they have to pay at least 10 cents per transaction. PayPal will do free transactions for, you know, private person to private person, or banks within a domestic country, most of them will do free transactions, free and instant, from person to person. And yeah, it's not a decentralized ledger, but most people don't care or understand any of that at all. They just want to be able to send money with their friends for, you know, fast, easy, and cheap. And a lot of people, I think they say that Bitcoin's about being able to make transactions without, you know, your transactions being censored or controlled. the vast majority of people in the world don't have to deal with any of that. The vast majority of people aren't doing things that are illegal. The vast majority of people aren't trying to send money for, you know, crack cocaine on the internet. Bitcoin maybe is useful for that, but most people just want to use it to buy things on Amazon or eBay or wherever else. And if Bitcoin isn't competitive with traditional payment systems for completely legal things, people aren't going to be using Bitcoin on a wide scale. And I want to see Bitcoin used on a wide scale by everyone on the planet. That's my rant for the moment.
Would you have a max block size tomorrow if you could snap your fingers? What are we thinking?
I think the network and the miners can be able to decide that. But asking what's the maximum block size, I see kind of akin as asking, well, what should the maximum internet speeds that are available be? Or what's the maximum hard drive speed? Or what's the maximum CPU speed? It's whatever the technology will permit and allow. So if the maximum you know, hard drive that's manufacturable today is 10 terabytes, that's how big they should build it. If the maximum block size that the network technologically can support today is 1 megabyte, so be it. But obviously it's not. It's much, much bigger than that. It's probably somewhere, you know, 20, 30, 40, maybe even 50 megabytes would still be just fine today. But the nice part about it is if the maximum block size today were set at 50 megabytes, the blocks wouldn't be 50 megabytes. The blocks would probably be about 1.5 megabytes. Maybe 2 megabytes. And if by increasing the block size, maximum block size from 1 megabyte to 50 megabytes, that gives us a 50x increase in transactional capacity on the Bitcoin network, which means we can have 50 times more Bitcoin transactions every day, 50 times more people using Bitcoin, 50 times more everything, just like that, overnight. And then that gives us plenty of time to develop these second layer technologies like Lightning Network and all sorts of other things to make the network more efficient. But right now the network's being suffocated today and people are choosing to use things other than Bitcoin because the network's being run at 100% full capacity for months and months and months now. And any businessman looks at that and says, that's absolutely retarded. We want to build a system that's easy and fast and cheap and useful in people's lives for people to use around the world. And with Bitcoin double spins being so easy, confirmation times taking hours, and fees, you know, I did a Bitcoin transaction last night. I paid $27 in fees for one single transaction. Yeah, my transaction had a bunch of inputs, but guess what? For $27, my bank can do the same thing. Why would I want to use Bitcoin? And the problem is only getting worse and worse and worse here. And at some point, people are just going to say, why would I use Bitcoin when I can use something other than Bitcoin? And this is a real giant problem. So I'm devoting all of my effort to solving this problem in the interim.
Okay. So many thoughts on this, but $27?
Yes. So I can tell you what's going on with that. So most people, if you have like, you know, a blockchain.info wallet on your phone or something, if you're sending Bitcoins to somebody, your transaction will have one, maybe two inputs and probably two outputs, right? One to the person you're paying and then one change output. With the transaction that I had a $27 fee with yesterday, I had been receiving payments from customers, right? Every customer is paying me, you know, $20, $50, $100 at a time or something. And then I waited until that added up until I had 50 Bitcoins. And it was over the course of like several hundred transactions, right? So maybe there were 300 inputs and there were two outputs, 50 Bitcoins and then the change amount. And so the total size of the transaction was several kilobytes. It was probably, I'd have to look it up, but it was probably, you know, maybe 20, 30 kilobytes or something. So it was a big transaction. But I'm actually in the process. I'm going to go and do some math pretty soon to figure out what it probably costs to, you know, per kilobyte to store on the blockchain. And I'm sure it's not $27 to store that sort of a size transaction. So,
what wallet or what was calculating the fee, or did you calculate the fee?
It was a customized version of Bitcoin Core. So it's like a proprietary version of Bitcoin Core.
Neat.
Those sort of transaction fees, maybe to people that are just, you know, buying Starbucks, those fees are uncommon. But for any business, go and ask any exchange, ask BitPay, ask you know, Kraken, ask any of these guys. Anybody that's receiving lots of payments, or if you receive a bunch of smaller payments and then send one bigger payment, fees in the tens of dollars are common. So ask any Bitcoin exchange, and they'll tell you every single day they're doing Bitcoin transactions where they're paying tens of dollars in fees for one single Bitcoin transaction.
Today's magic word is size. SIZE. Enter the magic word to claim your share of this week's LTB Coin listener reward on letstalkbitcoin.com. One of the things that people express is that when it comes to mining with such large blocks, I think you could have an advantage. I don't know, there's a complex balance with Bitcoin, and I feel like big changes might have unexpected results. You don't have any concerns?
I have a huge concern that big changes cause big problems. And right now we're in the middle of a big, big, big change. And what that change is the entire history of Bitcoin, there was effectively no maximum block size limit. People could put as many transactions into each block as they wanted. And the entire, you know, population of the world only wanted to put, you know, half at first it was 10, you know, maybe 10 kilobytes per block, and then 20 kilobytes, then 100 kilobytes, then, you know, half a megabyte, and then 3/4 of a megabyte. And then, you know, several months ago, the entire world population wanted to put more than a megabyte worth of transactions in each block. And that's where the major change came. Previously, people could put as many transactions as they wanted, and there was effectively no limit. And now there's an effective limit, and that's changing the fundamental economic dynamics of the Bitcoin network. And that's a huge, huge, huge change that people should be really, really worried about, because we know the economics worked fine when there was effectively no block size limit. People could do as much as they want, and Bitcoin, you know, grew by a, you know, order of magnitude pretty much every single year. And now that the blocks are completely full, we've completely changed that dynamic, and Bitcoin has stagnated. We're not seeing this same sort of, you know, exponential growth that we were seeing previously.
So I feel like there's been a cap on the block size as long as I can remember. When was that put on?
So maybe I didn't explain it quite clearly enough. So there's been a 1 megabyte limit for a while, but there was effectively no limit because nobody ever was wanting to do more than 1 megabyte worth of transactions.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So like they could do as many as they wanted and the blocks were never, ever, ever full. So there was effectively no block size limit, even though technically there was 1 megabyte, but nobody was ever filling it up, so it was never full. There were always plenty of extra room in the blocks all the time, whereas now the blocks are completely full almost all the time.
Okay, I hear you. I know there were times when I was paying more attention, and it seemed like there were what almost seemed like transactions just meaning to fill up blocks.
Yeah, the bigger the block size limit is, the more difficult it would be to do that sort of an attack.
How would you feel if Bitcoin were to not scale very quickly at all, but it was still used? I mean, to me, Bitcoin is great for, say, international payments that, you know, aren't so easy to do any other way necessarily. Obviously, there's a whole underground market where people are taking Bitcoin for sure. Obviously, people invest or they're holders. Do you believe that there's a niche for Bitcoin, even if it doesn't go the way you want?
Yeah, I don't think Bitcoin's ever going to disappear completely, but I think we have a really, really good shot of allowing Bitcoin to become a currency to rival the, you know, the U.S. dollar and the euro and the Japanese yen. And I think we only have one really good shot at that right now, and that shot's being strangled and stifled by not allowing Bitcoin to scale to keep up with the demand of people that want to use it. And that's really, really, really frustrating for me, because I can't think of a more positive impact that we can have on the entire world by bringing more economic freedom to people around the world by allowing Bitcoin to be able to be used by everyone around the world. And today, like, that's not being allowed to happen. And that's just so incredibly frustrating.
And so you think another cryptocurrency is going to step up and take its place?
Yeah, I think that people will start using something other than Bitcoin. And maybe it'll be, you know, U.S. government coin or China coin or European Union coin. We don't know. But I want the currency that winds up being used by people all around the world to have the strongest privacy and the strongest, you know, ease of use for people around the world without being able for it to be controlled. And I think we have a really good shot of doing that with Bitcoin. But if we wait for governments and politicians to figure out what the heck's happening and that they're about to lose control of the money supply, I bet they're going to try and come up with their own cryptocurrencies that where they have a lot more control and insight into what people are doing. And I don't want to see it go that way. I want to see it go the route of people having complete control over their own finances. And I think Bitcoin is our best shot of doing that. But we have to allow it to scale to allow all these people to start using it.
So you've obviously put your life into Bitcoin over the past 5 years.
Yeah.
If you just start to really feel like it's not going the way you want, do you have a plan B?
Yeah. So maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago now, I was so frustrated with Bitcoin not being allowed to scale that I've been involved in Bitcoin coming up on 6 years now. I'm like 5 years and 8 months or something like that at the moment. And for the first time in the entire time I've been involved in Bitcoin, I sold some of my Bitcoins because I was not optimistic enough about the scaling debate. And I'm still holding plenty of Bitcoins, but I sold some of my Bitcoins for some altcoins. I was lucky enough to buy some Monero before the price shot up there. I traded some back for US dollars as well. And I feel really sad having to say that because never, ever, ever in the first, you know, 5 years of my involvement in Bitcoin did I ever think that I would ever want to sell some of my Bitcoins for anything else. And Bitcoin not being allowed to scale made me do that just about 2.5-3 weeks ago now.
Is this something you've talked about publicly, or?
I think this is the first time I've said this on an interview of any sort, and it really pains me to say that. You know, I've devoted almost 6 years of my life, every waking moment, into this. I bought, you know, Bitcoin.com. I've invested in all these Bitcoin companies, and Bitcoin's being stifled from being allowed to scale and allowing people to use it around the world. Like, what could possibly be more frustrating in somebody's life than devoting 6 years, every waking moment, to doing something, and then a bunch of people saying, oh, we don't need the whole world to be using Bitcoin. We don't need to let Bitcoin scale in a prompt manner to allow people to use it. Like, talk about something frustrating. But luckily, I'm not one to only complain. I'm one to take action as well. So the Bitcoin.com mining pool is coming soon, and lots of other things are going to happen. The competing dev team is coming soon. I haven't given up on Bitcoin yet. Bitcoin is still going to succeed, and it's still going to become a currency that's going to rival the dollar, the euro, and the yen. And this is just a small bump in the road, but Bitcoin's had lots of bumps in the road, and this is just going to be one more that it overcomes.
I hadn't heard about the mining pool and the dev team. Is that something you've been talking about at all?
A little bit, yeah. So you probably didn't hear about it if you go to our Bitcoin for a lot of your news, like a lot of people, because the guy running that, Thamos, has initiated a bunch of moderation policies that basically mean any sort of dissenting opinion is not allowed and gets deleted automatically. So, you know, I've been involved in Bitcoin as heavily as anybody possibly could. I'm not a stupid guy. Maybe I'm wrong sometimes. Everybody can be wrong, but like, I'm not an idiot. And I put down my thoughts and on why I thought bigger blocks were a good idea, and I laid it all out in a real nice essay towards the end of last year. Somebody else submitted it to our Bitcoin, and I understand Thamos has, you know, a different opinion. He thinks that big blocks are a bad idea. So rather than stating clearly why he thinks big blocks are a bad idea, he just had my post deleted. And he has anybody else post deleted that advocates this position whatsoever. So it's really, really hard to get a sense for what the actual spirit of the ecosystem is when the most popular two platforms for discussion are Bitcoin and BitcoinTalk.org are both controlled by the same guy, and anybody with a dissenting opinion in favor of allowing Bitcoin to scale quickly via bigger blocks, they're not allowed to post. They're not allowed to state their opinion. They're not allowed to do anything. So lots of people like yourself don't even get to hear these opinions because this guy Thamos isn't allowing them to even be discussed. So that's one of the things that's so great about Bitcoin.com. We're trying to make that a place where people can discuss whatever they want. Like, you can come on there and advocate whatever position you want. We're not going to delete your post. And another competing group to that is rBTC on Reddit as well, where people can actually discuss what they want. All the moderation logs are completely public for rBTC, so you can see exactly what sort of thing is being deleted and what's not. And almost nothing gets deleted other than, you know, outright spam trying to sell, you know, Viagra or whatever. Unless they're accepting Bitcoin, then maybe we'd allow Viagra spam on there. I don't know. But anyhow, it's a big, big, big problem, the censorship that's going on those platforms. I'm working hard to solve those sorts of things as well in the form of Bitcoin.com.
No matter what your take on the issue, it would be nice to have one Reddit location for all of Bitcoin discussion, even ideas of changing it.
It sure would. Were you aware of what was going on with the issues on Reddit there already before I mentioned
that?
Yeah. Okay. But sadly, a lot of people aren't even aware of it because you're not even allowed to discuss that on our Bitcoin, which is where most new people that come to learn about Bitcoin go, right? And that's the one with the most traffic and has the right name.
When I first got into Bitcoin, there was you, Eric Voorhees, and Trace Mayer. For some reason, the three of you guys stuck out as these, you know, like wise libertarian guys who made a lot as early adopters and were all very active in the space and investing. And were you guys friends in the early days?
We became friends in the early days. So I first met Eric Voorhees at the very first Bitcoin conference ever, which was in the fall of 2011 in New York City, organized by a guy, Bruce Wagner. And Eric Voorhees, his introduction really stuck out to me. I didn't know who he was at that point. He already knew a little bit about who I was, I guess, because of Bitcoin and the Free State Project. So he came up to me and said, I think we should talk. And I said, okay. And he handed me his business card. And his business card just said, you know, there wasn't any company name or anything like that. It said, I'm friends with Satoshi, and it had his, you know, name and email address on there. And I thought that was a very, very memorable business card. And we actually become, you know, very good friends over the years. I really get along very well with Eric, and he hasn't been nearly as outspoken as I have on this scaling issue. And I don't want to put too many words in his mouth, but I think he's pretty close to being in agreement with most of the things that I've just said there. But that's that's for him to confirm or deny. But that's my take on it there.
And you never really had a close connection with Trace?
No, I know Trace as well. Trace was hanging out with me in St. Kitts this most recent winter as well. I know Trace from back in the early days with when I was an investor in BitInstant as well. So Trace and I get along well as well, although I don't think we see eye to eye on the scaling issue here. I think he seems to think that there's no way Bitcoin could ever be surpassed by something else and that people would ever use anything other than Bitcoin. But he and I disagree on that. So,
are there any other names you think that I'm leaving out that are kind of the same ilk as you guys?
No, I kind of feel like we were kind of the three musketeers in the early days of Bitcoin. Maybe Ira Miller was hanging out with us a lot in those days as well, and Charlie Shrim as well. But
I don't know the name Ira Miller. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, so he was at BitInstant originally with Charlie, and then later on with Eric Voorhees at Coinapult. So
okay.
But he was a coder, so like most coders, he's a bit quieter and doesn't talk quite as much. So.
Got it. Well, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you too, Rob.
Is there anything you'd like to plug for people, social media sites, websites?
Yeah, anybody that's hearing the things that I'm trying to do with Bitcoin here and is in agreement that Bitcoin should scale quickly to allow more people to use it. If you have any sort of website referencing Bitcoin, make sure to reference Bitcoin.com on there, because Bitcoin.com is all about allowing Bitcoin to be a currency that can rival the dollar, the euro, and the yen. And if you want that to happen, Bitcoin.com is the place. So the more links to Bitcoin.com across the internet, the more likely we'll be able to displace Bitcoin.org as the top result on Google, because Bitcoin.org doesn't seem interested in allowing Bitcoin to scale. So Bitcoin.com for all your Bitcoin needs.
But for all the people who maybe, like Bitcoin, but maybe still for whatever reason aren't sure about the bigger blocks, but they want it to scale, will they still find something at Bitcoin.com too?
Absolutely. And even if you're not sure about bigger blocks and being able to scale, you should support free and open discussion of Bitcoin. And Bitcoin.org doesn't allow that either. So, for example, when the CEO of Coinbase came out in favor of bigger blocks, they removed Coinbase from being listed on Bitcoin.org. Like, that's craziness.
Sometimes I'm sad to see Bitcoin so divided.
Me too. I'm sad. I'm sad about that too.
I don't want to get us back into another discussion as we're signing off, though. So thanks again.
Thanks, Rob.
I did it. I spoke to another of Bitcoin's three musketeers. Trace, you're next. Please come by this episode's show notes page and let me know what you thought of this interview. I'll be giving away a Bitcoin keychain to someone who comments. On the page, you'll also find links to topics we discussed. Just go to thebitcoingame.com and look for episode 39 with Roger Ver. For opposing viewpoints on Bitcoin's block size debate, listen to The Bitcoin Game episode 34 with Peter Todd or episode 35 with Samson Mao. My goal is to provide a spectrum of ideas and personalities on the show. I'm the BTC Game on Twitter, or send email to rob@thebitcoingame.com. See you next time. Bless you.
That was the guy next to me, but okay. Thank you.
Bless him.
Bless you, Makoto, he says. He's laughing now, too.